Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for December 5th, 2008. This week, we'll tell you why boats spell trouble for manatees. We'll try to convince you that bananas are really blue. And we'll report on a woman with a condition that's never been described by science before. But first, Suzanne's going to tell you why the minerals we have on Earth today wouldn't be possible without the evolution of life.
There are 4,300 different kinds of minerals that can be found on Earth today. This is far more than the 500 or so that were around when our planet first formed billions of years ago. This week I spoke with Robert Hazen, who's a senior staff scientist at the Carnegie Institution's Geophysical Laboratory. He says you might be surprised to learn that the cause of the great diversity of minerals that we have on Earth today was actually the emergence of life.
What life does that's unlike anything else is it creates new chemical environments. And in particular, life pours oxygen into the atmosphere. Now, oxygen is a very unstable gas. It's a very corrosive gas. It's a gas that just would not occur on Earth in any significant amounts at all, except for the fact that we have plants, we have microbes, they're pumping oxygen out all the time. Sunlight comes in, they take water, they take CO2, they pump out oxygen. And that oxygen is so corrosive that it affects every mineral on the surface of the Earth.
He says the corrosive effects of oxygen led to the formation of several thousand minerals.
Just as rust is a mineral, an iron oxide, there are thousands of manganese and copper and zinc and lead and nickel and uranium minerals that are essentially like rust. And those minerals would not occur if it weren't for the fact that life had pumped oxygen into the atmosphere.
He says the number and diversity of minerals is a good indicator of whether or not a planet harbors life, or if it did so in the past.
The implications are really fascinating in terms of what we now know to look for as we look at other planets. Each planet, each moon, went through a period of mineral evolution. Some stopped at 350, some stopped at 500, some stopped at 1,000 or 1,500. Earth's still going. It's up to 4,300, and maybe that number is increasing. So different planets and moons can be characterized by the minerals. And what that means is we can now use minerals to go out and look for life. We go to Mars. If you find certain key minerals, even if life is no longer near the surface, even if Mars is a dead world now, if it ever had life, that life may have triggered the formation of minerals which persist. You know, in our society, the concept of biological evolution is constantly under attack. And people say, well, it's just implausible. Who can imagine life changing over time? And if life were the only system that changed over time, maybe they'd have some reason to argue that. But in fact, when we look at the natural world, we see every complex system around us goes through this evolutionary process. Isotopes evolve in stars. Minerals evolve. Organic molecules, the building blocks of life, evolved. Languages evolved. Material culture evolved. So how could biology be different? Why would biology be the only complex system in our natural world that didn't evolve? It just doesn't make sense. So mineral evolution provides us insights into other evolving systems.
Hazen and his colleagues hope this insight will inspire new interest in the study of minerals.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, Science Update guest reporter Chelsea Wald is here to tell you about what's being done to save some very popular creatures.
The gentle sea mammals known as manatees get hit by boats so often that they're identified by their propeller scars. For a long time, people thought that manatees were too stupid or too slow to get out of the way. But Edmund Gerstein of Florida Atlantic University has found that the noise from boats is simply too low-pitched for manatees' ears.
Boats were never part of the evolutionary picture for manatees, and so they never evolved to hear these low-frequency sounds.
That means that simply slowing down won't work. So Gerstein's group is now developing an alarm system that targets the manatee's high-frequency hearing range. It goes on the front of a boat, and it's not any louder than sounds manatees themselves make.
So what we've done is created a very highly directional device that the animals actually only hear when they're in the direct path of the boat.
But does it work? Gerstein has been testing the alarm on wild manatees in field trials in Florida. They set up a grid of underwater microphones and an aerial video camera to monitor the manatees' reactions. In the 30 field trials they've done with the alarm, the manatees have moved out of the boat's path every time.
And for 97% of the trials that we've run without the alarm, we've always had to veer away from the animal. The animals just don't respond.
Gerstein hopes the results will convince regulators and environmentalists to adopt this approach to protecting the gentle giants.
Thanks, Chelsea. What if you couldn't even recognize your own child's voice? That's what a patient known as KH struggles with. Doctoral student Lucia Garrido of University College London says KH is the first person known to have been born with a disability called phonagnosia.
She could not recognize people on the phone. She could not recognize even her daughter on the phone. She could not recognize singers, and she really appreciates music. She just could not recognize people when she was not seeing them.
But the researchers found that she could do related things, like recognize anger or sadness in voices. The researchers say that studying KH will help them understand how voice recognition works in the brain, but they need more people like her. So if you or someone you know might have a similar condition, you might want to contact them, and you can find their contact information at our website, www.scienceupdate.com. Finally today, Suzanne found out why bananas aren't quite what they seem.
George Carlin once remarked on the rarity of blue fruit.
Every other color is represented. Red is raspberry, cherry, and strawberry. Orange is orange. Yellow is lemon. Green is lemon. Brown is meat.
Wait. What about blueberries?
And of course, there's blue bananas.
What? No. I was under the crazy impression that bananas were yellow.
I'm not pulling your leg here. Turns out, scientists have discovered that as bananas ripen, they glow a fluorescent blue color under ultraviolet light. I asked organic chemist Bernhard Kreitler of the University of Innsbruck in Austria to explain this. He says that chlorophyll, the compound responsible for plant growth, actually breaks down into fluorescent compounds when bananas stop growing and start to ripen.
These fluorescent compounds in the extracts of the banana peels are luminous. They shine blue light. When you irradiate them with black light, the light in the ultraviolet that we can't really see. And this was very surprising because all other fruit and leaves that we had analyzed before, they would never show these fluorescing components. And we were very surprised that no one had seen this before. But you see, that's quite frequently so in science, that only when you start to look after something that you really actually discover it.
Now you're probably wondering, does having a blue glow help the bananas in any way? Well, they're not certain yet, but it turns out that some banana-eating animals can see ultraviolet light. These animals are important dispersers of banana seeds, so being fluorescent might actually aid banana reproduction.
Whoa, okay, thanks, Suzanne. I'm such a geek, I'm going to have to go home and actually try this. And you know that whatever the reason behind blue bananas, this discovery is sure to become a staple of junior high school science labs everywhere.
Definitely.
Well, that is our show for this week. Next week, we've got some health stories for you. We'll tell you what sleep has to do with cancer, why your birthday could increase your risk of asthma, and we'll answer a listener's question about how bleach disinfects things. Until then, check out our Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We've got an intriguing new science story every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.